Ekatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. Welcome back to our deep dive. Today, we're really getting into the mind itself. We're tackling a truly monumental figure, Sigmund Freud, and his landmark work, The Interpretation of Dreams.
Yeah, this is a big one.
It really is.
Yeah.
And look, this isn't just about figuring out why you dreamt you were flying or, you know, late for an exam. It's about a fundamental shift in understanding ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Freud basically challenged everything people thought about dreams for centuries.
Absolutely. And that's really our goal here today, to explore Freud's, well, pretty audacious claim that dreams aren't just mental noise. He argued they're highly structured, meaningful psychological events.
The famous Royal Road, right.
That's the one. The Royal Road to a knowledge of the unconscious activities of the mind. It was a revolutionary idea suggesting there's this hidden part of us and dreams are the way in.
Okay, so quite a claim. How are we going to unpack this? Where did this idea even come from?
Well, that's where we'll start. We need to understand Freud himself. What made him the right person, maybe, to even think this way?
Right. And then we'll dive into his core theory, this idea of wish fulfillment. Sounds simple, maybe, but it gets complicated fast.
Definitely. We'll look at the dream work, as he called it, the mechanisms that twist and disguise these hidden wishes into the often bizarre dreams we remember.
And finally, bring it back to us. You know, what are the real life takeaways? Do these century-old ideas still mean anything for understanding ourselves today?
I think you'll find they do. It offers a really powerful lens, even now.
Okay, let's start with the man himself, Sigmund Freud. We all know the name, obviously. Founder of psychoanalysis, Austrian neurologist.
Yep.
Born 1856, died 1939. But what put him in a position to write this book? Before him, dreams were mostly seen as, what, divine messages or just indigestion, right?
Pretty much, or just random brain static. What set Freud apart was, well, a few things. First, his rigorous medical background. He trained at the University of Vienna, did extensive clinical work, especially with patients diagnosed with hysteria.
Ah, right, under Charcot in Paris, too, wasn't it? Where they were starting to think maybe some physical symptoms had psychological roots.
Exactly. That clinical experience was crucial. And his earlier work, like studies on hysteria with Josef Breuer, had already touched on concepts like the unconscious and the talking cure, the idea that just talking about problems could relieve symptoms. So he was already thinking below the surface.
But here's the really unique part, I think. His self-analysis. He didn't just study patients. He turned the microscope intensely on himself, using his own dreams as primary data. That feels, well, quite brave for a scientist at the time, maybe even a bit risky.
Oh, incredibly brave and definitely controversial. I mean, using yourself as the main subject, it opens you up to all sorts of criticisms about objectivity.
Sure.
But Freud believed that by rigorously applying his methods to his own mind, he could uncover universal psychological truths. He wasn't afraid to look at taboo subjects, sexuality, aggression, repression. He brought a kind of scientific rigor to areas that were previously just superstition or philosophy.
He put himself on the line, basically.
He really did. He dared to explore his own depths, and that gave the work immense credibility, even alongside the controversy. He was a genuine pioneer mapping uncharted territory.
Okay, so that sets the stage. Let's get to the core idea, the really revolutionary part. What was Freud actually saying about dreams?
His central thesis was deceptively simple on the surface, but profound. He argued that dreams are not chaotic. They're not meaningless. They are meaningful psychological acts.
Okay. Meaningful how?
Here's the kicker. He claimed every single dream is a form of wish fulfillment.
Every dream.
Every dream. He argued it represents the disguised satisfaction of a repressed or unconscious desire. Something you want, perhaps deeply, but you either don't know you want it or you can't admit it consciously, maybe because it's socially unacceptable.
Right. That's the part that always gets me. Because, okay, maybe I dream I win the lottery, easy wish fulfillment. But what about nightmares, anxiety dreams, you know, dreaming you're naked in public or being chased? How is that fulfilling a wish? It feels awful.
That's the crucial question. And Freud had an answer, though it's perhaps one of the trickier parts of the theory. He argued that even unpleasant dreams fulfill wishes, often an unconscious wish for punishment.
Punishment.
Yeah. Like if you unconsciously feel guilty about something, a forbidden thought maybe, or an action, that nightmare could be your psyche granting the wish to be punished for it, to sort of alleviate the guilt.
Huh. So the unpleasantness is the fulfillment in a twisted way.
In a way, yes. Or it could be fulfilling the wish of the censoring part of the mind to keep the real underlying forbidden wish hidden. Ultimately, Freud saw the dream's main function as protecting sleep.
Protecting sleep.
How, by providing this sort of hallucinatory outlet for psychic tension for these wishes, even a nightmare is, in a way, preferable to waking up and confronting the raw desire or conflict directly. It allows the mind to discharge some energy so you can stay asleep. It's a kind of mental safety valve.
Wow. Okay, so it's not just wish fulfillment in the simple sense. It's a complex mechanism for managing unconscious desires and protecting our sleep. He was basically saying, forget gods or random brain firings. There's a psychological reason for dreams, and we can analyze it.
Precisely. He was proposing a scientific method to access the hidden workings of the mind, challenging centuries of interpretation. It really shifted the paradigm. We weren't just rational beings anymore. We had this deep, hidden, often irrational unconscious driving us.
Which leads us nicely into how we interpret them. If dreams are disguised wishes, how do we decode the disguise? He talked about different layers, didn't he?
He did. Two key layers. First, the manifest content. That's the dream as you remember it. The surface story, the images, the characters, the feelings. You know, I dreamt I was flying over my childhood home, but the trees were made of clocks. That kind of thing.
A weird narrative bit.
Exactly. But underneath that is the crucial part, the latent content. These are the hidden, unconscious thoughts, desires, and wishes that the manifest dream actually represents. It's the real meaning, the raw material that's been disguised.
Okay, so why the disguise? Why are dreams so often bizarre and nonsensical? Why not just dream the wish directly?
Ah, because of dream censorship. Freud envisioned an internal psychological censor, like a guard at the gate between the unconscious and conscious mind. Its job is to prevent disturbing or unacceptable wishes, often related to sex or aggression, things society frowns upon from reaching conscious awareness directly.
So the censor forces the dream to get weird.
Pretty much. This censorship leads to dream distortion. The unconscious wish has to be disguised, warped, symbolized, made strange, so it can slip past the censor without waking you up or causing too much distress. The weirdness is the disguise. It's like sending a coded message.
Okay, so how do we crack the code? Did he give us a method? Not like those dream dictionaries, right?
Yeah.
Flying means freedom, teeth falling out means anxiety.
No, definitely not. Freud was strongly against universal symbol dictionaries. He believed the meaning was deeply personal. His method was free association.
Free association. How does that work?
You take elements from the manifest dream, an image, a person, a feeling, and you just talk. You say whatever comes into your mind in connection with that element without censoring yourself, no matter how irrelevant, embarrassing, or nonsensical it seems.
Just let your mind wander from that starting point.
Exactly. Freud believed that this chain of associations, if followed honestly, would eventually lead you back from the disguised manifest content to the original, hidden, latent thought or wish.
He used his own dreams for this, didn't he? That famous Irma dream.
Yes. The dream of Irma's injection is his most detailed example. The manifest dream was about him examining a patient, Irma, feeling concerned, seeing other doctors, one giving her an injection. It seemed like professional anxiety. But through painstaking free association on every detail, the look of her throat, the chemical formula he saw, the critical colleagues, he traced it back. He revealed it as a complex wish fulfillment for himself.
What was the wish?
Essentially, to absolve himself of responsibility for Irma's incomplete cure, to blame another doctor, Otto, represented in the dream, and to sort of vindicate his own theories and methods against criticism. It exposed his own ambitions and anxieties. It's a fascinating, if very intricate, example of the method in action.
Wow. Okay, so the method is key. What about the actual stuff dreams are made of? Where does the content come from?
Freud identified a few main sources for the raw material, the latent content. One major source is days residue.
Days residue, like leftover thoughts.
Kind of. Trivial events, passing thoughts, images, conversations from the day before often get picked up and woven into the dream. They're like readily available building blocks. But often they're used because they have some symbolic connection, however faint, to the deeper unconscious wish. They provide convenient cover.
So that annoying email from yesterday might pop up, but it's actually representing a deeper frustration.
It could be, yeah. The unconscious is opportunistic. It uses what's handy. Then, crucially, there are childhood experiences.
Classic Freud.
Well, yes.
Yeah.
He believed that many powerful fundamental wishes and conflicts originate in early childhood. These early experiences, desires, fears, relationships, they leave a lasting imprint and often form the deep core of the latent content in adult dreams. things like the Oedipus complex, you know, were his attempt to map these foundational early conflicts.
Whether you buy into the specifics of Oedipus or not, the idea that early life shapes us profoundly makes sense.
It does. And finally, he also acknowledged somatic stimuli. Physical sensations during sleep, like needing to pee, feeling cold, or even indigestion, can trigger dream images or get incorporated into the dream narrative.
Okay, so we have the hidden wish, the day's residue, childhood stuff, maybe a physical feeling. But how does the mind actually do the disguising? You mentioned the dream work. What are the mechanics? How does it translate thoughts into those weird pictures?
Right. The dream work mechanisms are how the latent content gets transformed into the manifest content. Freud outlined four main processes. First, condensation.
Condensation, like squeezing things together.
Exactly. Multiple latent thoughts, ideas, people, or memories can be compressed into a single element in the manifest dream. So a dream figure might look like your boss, act like your father, and wear your friend's hat. It's economical, and it hides the distinct sources.
Makes sense. What else?
Second, displacement. This is a really important one. The emotional charge, the intensity or significance attached to an important latent thought, gets shifted onto a seemingly unimportant or neutral element in the manifest dream.
Can you give an example?
Sure. Say you have intense, maybe unacceptable, anger towards your parent. In the dream, that intense anger might appear, but it's directed at a random stranger or maybe even an inanimate object. The feeling is there, but its target is shifted, displaced, making it less threatening to the conscious mind.
So the emotion is real, but it's attached to the wrong thing in the dream.
Precisely. It hides the true source of the feeling. Third is representation, or sometimes called considerations of representability. This is about turning abstract thoughts and relationships into concrete, usually visual, images.
Like thinking becoming seeing.
Yeah. How do you represent the idea of conflict or desire visually? The dream work translates these abstract concepts into pictures, often using symbolism. This is where Freud got into specific symbols, long objects for the phallus, containers for the womb, etc.
That was probably the most debated part of his theory now, right? Those universal symbols.
Absolutely. Modern psychoanalysis sees symbols as much more personal and culturally influenced, but the basic principle that abstract thoughts get represented by concrete images and dreams is still widely accepted. The mind thinks in pictures when we sleep.
Okay, and the last one.
Secondary revision. This happens mostly as you're waking up or trying to recall the dream. Your rational mind tries to smooth out the inconsistencies, fill in the gaps, and make the bizarre dream narrative more logical and coherent. It's like your waking ego trying to impose order on the chaos of the unconscious. It adds another layer of distortion, ironically, by trying to make sense of it.
Wow. Condensation, displacement, representation, secondary revision. It's like a whole secret language with its own grammar.
It really is. Freud believed the dream work showed us the logic of the illogical, the peculiar way the unconscious mind operates.
So bringing this all together, what are the big takeaways for someone listening? What does Freud's deep dive into dreams really mean for how we see ourselves?
Well, I think there are a few massive core messages that still resonate. First, and maybe the biggest, is the unconscious mind as a driving force. You are not entirely the master of your own house. Freud showed us that so much of our behavior, our feelings, our choices are driven by forces outside our conscious awareness.
That's kind of unsettling, isn't it?
It can be, but also potentially liberating. Understanding that there's more to you than just your conscious thoughts can explain a lot. Second, the primacy of childhood. Our earliest experiences, especially relationships, leave deep marks. They form a kind of blueprint for our adult desires, fears, and relationship patterns. What happened back then echoes powerfully in the now, often through our unconscious.
Okay, the past isn't really past.
Not in the unconscious, no. Third, symbolism and the language of the unconscious. Our minds, especially our unconscious minds, communicate differently. They use symbols, metaphors, images, associations. Learning to understand dreams is like learning to decode this incredibly rich, personal, symbolic language.
It's like our inner world has its own poetry.
That's a great way to put it. And finally, repression and psychological defense. We actively push away thoughts and feelings that are uncomfortable or unacceptable. But they don't just vanish. They remain active in the unconscious and seek expression, often indirectly through symptoms, slips of the tongue, and, of course, dreams.
The dreams are like leaks from the repressed unconscious.
In a sense, yes. Carefully disguised leaks, thanks to the dream work.
Okay, these are big ideas. But how does this translate into real life? Are there practical ways to use these insights today, beyond just understanding the theory?
Definitely. Even if you don't go into full psychoanalysis, there are real applications. For personal self-understanding and growth, simply paying attention to your dreams can be huge.
Like keeping a dream journal.
Exactly. Jotting down dreams, noticing recurring themes, strong emotions, bizarre images, and then maybe doing a bit of gentle free association on your own, noticing patterns. It can give you incredible insights into your own anxieties, hidden desires, unresolved conflicts. It builds emotional intelligence.
It's like getting messages from your hidden self.
It really is. Then there's unlocking creativity. The way the dream work operates condensation, making weird connections, using symbols, it's very similar to the creative process. Artists, writers, even scientists often report finding solutions in dreams. Tapping into that less logical, more associative way of thinking can break creative blocks.
That makes sense. Letting go of linear thought.
Yeah. And think about improving interpersonal relationships. If you understand that people, including yourself, are often driven by unconscious motives, that their anger might be displaced, that their reactions might stem from old childhood patterns, it can foster a lot more empathy and patience.
So you might react less to the surface behavior and wonder what's really going on underneath.
Exactly. It helps you look for the latent content in interactions, not just the manifest behavior, and of course, therapeutic applications. While methods have evolved, the core idea that exploring the unconscious, often through dreams, is vital for healing remains central to psychodynamic therapies today. Dreams are still seen as valuable clues to inner conflicts.
So the message for you listening might be, don't dismiss those weird dreams, that strange image, that nonsensical plot twist. That might actually be the most important part, the bit that's trying hardest to tell you something if you pay attention.
That's a perfect way to put it. The garbage is often where the gold is hidden. Really, the most valuable lesson, I think, from digging into Freud's interpretation of dreams is just how incredibly deep and complex the human mind is. Much more complex than we usually assume.
Yeah, that things like our anxieties, our slips of the tongue, our seemingly random dreams, they aren't meaningless noise. Freud argued they're packed with meaning, expressions of our hidden unconscious dynamics.
Right. It forces us to confront the idea that we aren't just rational creatures. We're driven by this whole other world inside us full of desires, fears, memories we might not even know we have.
And exploring that inner world, that unconscious territory, even though it could be maybe a bit scary or uncomfortable, is really the path towards greater self-understanding and maybe even psychological freedom.
Exactly. The weirdness, the illogical nature of dreams isn't a bug, it's a feature. It's the language the unconscious uses. It's communication from a deeper part of you, waiting to be understood.
Well, we hope this deep dive has maybe sparked some curiosity about your own inner world and perhaps encouraged you to listen a bit more closely to your own dreams. Who knows what you might discover on your personal royal road? Thanks for joining us on this exploration of Sigmund Freud's The Interpretation of Dreams.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.